Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Mike Krieger. We'll call you former Deputy CIO G6 of the Army. Mr. Krieger, thank you so much for joining us one last time.
Thank you for this opportunity, Jason.
Well, it's always interesting when I get to sit down with someone as they're exiting their career, if you will, at least their government career, and we'll talk about if you're going to have a second career, if this is it for you. I always find that when you look back over the years, how much things have changed and everything you've seen in terms of the change, I think that is just fascinating. So let's just start with the basics. You retired, October 31st. And why now, and what comes next?
I loved being the Deputy CIO G6, but I've been mentoring folks my entire career that after 5 years, now I'll say after 5 or 6 years, you should consider doing something else, mainly because diversity is an important tenet of career broadening. And I spent 5 years at OSD C3I. I spent 6 years in the Army. I don't think there's another job in DOD I want at this point. And so I think it's time for a transition. I'm going to take some time out with my wife and look and try to find something I'm passionate about again. I do expect that I'll go back to Journey, but I look forward to the journey of finding what's next.
So this is not a retired to Florida playing golf 8 hours a day. This is you'll find yourself back in the federal community, or at least the technology community. Do you know yet?
Honestly, don't know. I think I'll probably find myself in the technology community for sure. And a little bit of uncertainty, not sure what I'm going to do, but I think there's something out there I can be passionate about.
Very good. Well, it's well deserved. Now, you were in government for how many years? And to discuss your career a little bit, you mentioned working for OSD, you mentioned working for the Army. Where else did you work? And just give us a sense of the entire career.
So I was in government over 35 years. I was a tactical Army communicator, a signal officer for 25 years. And then when I got out, came back to the OSD C3I at the time, and II, now DOD CIO, was there for 5 years and then here for 6 years. You know, beginning career was tactical communications, command and control, a little bit of acquisition oversight, and a little bit of the initial internet in the early 90s. And then most of my time as a senior executive has been, you know, big internet and services and cloud computing and so on.
You've seen a ton of change. When you look back over your career, what stands out to you as the biggest change you've seen, whether it's DOD specific, Army specific, or just more broadly within the government, from a technology, from an acquisition, from a management perspective? And you can, if you want, hit all three.
Clearly, the change is the pace of change in IT has accelerated exponentially since I came on board. And now it's the internet. Now it's everything connected and big analytics and big cloud. So I mean, I've seen the change. Initially, it was all just establishing communications point to point. But now it's all IP, it's all internet, and it's all big data.
When you first came in, I mean, did you have computers on your desk? I always love to hear the stories about people who, you know, 35, 40, 50 years ago or more, talk about, well, there was one phone in the office, and we all got to use it when it was appropriate, or we all had, you know, there's one computer in the office that we all had to learn how to do, and it was, you know, a green screen, Wang or something. Give me a sense of just what the change that you've seen has been.
So it's funny you should say that. My first assignment was in Camp Colburn, Korea, which is a remote camp, and believe it or not, the phone system, this is 1979, 1980, the phone system was I picked up the phone, one phone in my office, had to wait for the operator to answer, tell her where to connect me on the post. If I wanted to call to Yongsong, you know, that was, you really had to make a connection, call another operator for that. So, yeah, when I started out, communications were pretty much switchboards.
Which is interesting because you don't think of it back, even late 70s, early 80s, as you have to say, you know, Klondike 5, 8282 or something. You think, you know, just you picked up the dial tone and you dialed a number. And obviously, it's where you were. You said, I think you said Korea, so maybe that was part of it as well. When you look at your career, let's talk maybe some personal highlights, some things that really stand out to you. What are you most proud of?
You know, most proud of most recent. So I think I'm most proud of the migration of 1.4 million Army users to Defense Enterprise Email. That was a pretty big change management for the Army. And not only many dimensions to the change, right? Not only did we become centralized on a service that more like the electricity from the wall, not done locally anymore, but first service that we collapsed, the Army National Guard, the Reserves, the MedCom, all into one Army service. So that is real change management, as well as changing the IT architecture.
And I definitely want to talk a little bit more about the enterprise email, because I know that was your baby in many regards. You saw some turnover in terms of CIOs, and you were the one that kind of was the glue that stuck it all together. But before we go down there, when you look back on your early part of your career, I mean, did you see yourself in the CIO office? Did you see yourself being a policy guy, or were you always more of a, I want to be a hands-on guy?
My career was more hands-on. So most of my career was operational. Yeah, I probably never saw myself here. Didn't envision I'd get here. But no matter where you are in IT, you're doing the same thing. You're trying to be more operationally effective for your customer, because it's a customer business. You're trying to be more secure. And even back in 79, we were trying to be secure. Then it was making sure the ComSec was turned on and keyed. And then you're always trying to save money. So I don't think the polarities we manage change. I think the way we manage them or the way we implement has changed.
That implementation, it's been probably great to see, because when you first started out, as you said, you was the switchboard lady in Korea, and then things picked up. At what point, and maybe it was just more recently in the last 5 or 7 years, but at one point did you maybe make that connection that, wow, this technology thing's really going to take off, is really going to have a bigger impact than we ever imagined?
Well, you know, it's funny you ask that. So I think for me it took off in Germany in the early 90s. I was the S3 for a core signal brigade in the 5th Corps. And I saw it at the core talk. So in the early 90s is the first time we started running Ethernet LANs at the core to connect over packet switches, then an MSE. But that was the first inkling that suddenly our users were going to use computers to get their work done. And so we had to change the way we delivered the comms.
And how difficult was the change for them? I mean, did you have people who understood that you had to run the Ethernet, that you had to connect them? Or was it, a lot of times when I talk to people who are leaving, it was almost like you just felt your way through it. You made some mistakes, and then you were able to fix those mistakes and get the network to work or whatever it was to make the connection.
So I would say it differently. I think we had a very small core of a couple guys that understood it and were pioneering, and the rest of us were all just trying to catch up.
When you look back now, I mean, it's almost that way if you compare that to maybe cyber, or you compare it to some of the other buzzwords of the day, the Internet of Things as an example. I mean, do you see similarities and differences between now and you know, 20, 30 years ago?
Yeah, so what's the same is you got to find leaders that are comfortable with change, right? So, I mean, there's people very uncomfortable with change. There's people comfortable with change. In the IT world, you really got to find innovators that are comfortable with change.
And I think that's difficult in many regards, but as someone who kind of grew up in that change, did you find that's maybe part of the reason why you've had such great success as a deputy CIO G6?
Well, so I can honestly say I actually got more comfortable with change the older I got and the more experience I got. So on big projects like Enterprise Email, I was comfortable that we didn't have all the answers, but it was more important to get started and kind of do exploring by fire, figure out what the next problems were, solve them, and keep going. The problem in this space is you've got people that want to know all the answers up front, and if that's the case, you'll never get off first base.
I think you just described the government's acquisition process. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk more about enterprise email. My guest today is Mike Krieger, the former Deputy CIO G6 of the Army. I'm Jason Miller. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com. And welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guest today is Mike Krieger, the former Deputy CIO G6 of the Army. I'm Jason Miller, your host. Mike, before break, we were talking a little bit about the early part of your career, how things have changed, and you brought up enterprise email. And as I said earlier, that was your baby. You saw several changes within the CIO ranks, but you still were able to shepherd it through. When you decided to retire after 35 plus years, give me a sense of, was it because you felt enterprise email as your child was in a good spot? You felt good about that moment that, okay, now you can hand it off to somebody else. Give me a sense of how much did that play into your decision making?
That really didn't play at all. But the neat thing about enterprise email is it's ubiquitous now and expected. Now you've got people that 3 years ago would have said it's not the right thing. Now people say, yeah, it's really working. Let's do other things in the same way. And so what I'm very proud of is that the culture's changed a little bit, and people have seen that some IT services ought to be managed from the enterprise and some ought to be local. And now they're looking for more things that ought to be managed the enterprise and just and made very simple and just, you know, just like electricity you consume from the wall. And so I'm very pleased that I've seen that change. It really, honestly, it had nothing to do with me leaving.
Well, sometimes people want to say they want to get a project done and then they know they can move on when they get to a certain point. So I wasn't sure if you felt like there's a certain point you wanted to get to with enterprise email, because with 35 years in, you could have retired last year, you could retire 6 months from now, you could have retired 3 years ago. So I wasn't sure if there was something else about that.
So it was the next project that kept me until this year. So my wife and I had been negotiating for a couple of years trying to pick the date, and it was actually, we were arguing 14 or 15. What kept me the extra year was the joint regional security stacks and the capacity increase, because I argued or discussed with my wife that I really wanted to get that one to a point of maturity before I left. And so it really was the next project after enterprise email that probably extended me.
I want to go talk about the JRSS as well, but let's just talk about the enterprise email. You talk about it was a major culture change, and now people are looking for that next shared service or enterprise service. How did you push through that culture change? And I'll use the word push through lightly. I don't mean like you jammed it down their throats, but how did you make it happen? Because so many times when we talk technology, when we talk government change, you always hear at conferences, and you've been to 1,000 of them, oh, it's the culture change. That's the real hard thing. How did you make it happen?
But I would tell you, and I've been saying this for a while, the key to change in IT is effective governance. And so the one nice thing about working in the Army is we have tiered governments that goes up all the way to the chief and the secretary. And what we learned in enterprise email was how to do the business case analysis to make our argument for the Army, why this is more effective, why this is more secure, why this is going to save money, and then take that through the government chain to get a decision. And then we're an Army, and we wrote an order. You know, we actually had a G3 order in enterprise email with thousands of frag hosts, and we had joint orders with DISA. And so the change was implementing the order, but the key was getting the decision from the Sec Army, this is the right thing to do, we're going to allocate resources about it, and we're going to go do it. And so the nice thing about the Army, I think why we're doing so well, is we have a governance process that if you make a cogent argument, then you'll get resource to do it. And if you succeed, you'll continue to get resourced. And if you don't have strong governments, in federal government, what I've discovered, if you don't have that strong governance, it's hard to make your argument and get that initial funding and start something.
But one could argue that even if you had all those things, somebody could be whispering in the Secretary of the Army's ear going, no, this is bad, let's not do this. And that's something you have to overcome. So no matter how good your business case is, you still have somebody who says, No, this is not going to be good.
So we certainly experienced that with enterprise email. As you remember, I mean, there was a lot of naysayers until we probably got over 500 or 600K users on it. I just think you got to be persistent, and you've got to have a good stratcom. And what I learned is you got to be aggressive at responding to all those comments. So you'll remember, because, I mean, you were there. So, you know, one of the first things that we did is I discovered that no matter what happened, people would take it negatively and spin it differently. So I started that blog, you know, and the interesting thing about a blog with the IT community was I could put out data on the blog that got consumed really quick. And so at least the stories were 80% accurate. And it was a good stratcom way to shape the stories to try to get the message out earlier. Because as you said, the problem with this is messaging. It's who gets there first and says something, and you got to respond to it. So what Margaret and I discovered together here, and Margaret's our public relations person, was that, okay, so wake up and use the media. And it turned out that the most thing I blogged about in my 6 years here were initial achievements on enterprise email to start showing forward momentum and that it was working.
It's interesting. Use the media. And I think that's every time you put out a blog that said, we did this on enterprise email, or we're about to take that next step, it became news. And it became a even a basic story that said, hey, the Army says they've made this much progress. And even when you've had people who come back and said, well, they're lying, or that's a half-truth or something, it doesn't matter, because it's all about getting out in front of it. And I think the government makes a lot of mistakes that way. They always are playing from behind. Is that maybe the biggest lesson that you would share with your colleagues when any big initiative, whether it's email or whatever, is just be on the front end of it? Not necessarily use the media, because we don't love that.
No, I think you're exactly right. And I would just add something to it. So I think you got to be aggressive in getting the message out. I think that's the answer. But you also got to be transparent and honest. So I I was always very honest that, hey, we have this problem. We're going to take a pause to go fix it. And so I think there's a couple tenets here, right? So I think you do have to be aggressive in your communication, saying what's going on. Share what's going on. Don't hold it back. I do think that government makes a mistake. Sometimes we go into silent mode. But the second thing is you got to be totally transparent. You got to be honest about your accomplishments, honest about what's not working. And then as you make progress, you got to continually share it. No, I think that's exactly right.
And you guys did a nice job. You guys were always out at FC events and other conferences talking about it and answering questions. And I can just say from my perspective, well, all the people that I dealt with, you're always very accessible after the events, which made my job easier and could answer more questions. So I'll thank you for that. Let's shift from enterprise email to JRSS, Joint Regional Security Stacks. What's the latest with that, and why at this point do you feel comfortable to hand it off to somebody else?
Just to finish that last conversation, the other thing that I think I learned to be really successful on was partnering with Doug Wilsey as my acquisition counterpart. So as you know, in a lot of the engagements, it was always Doug and I. And so I could speak from a CIO and then my acquisition partner, and we always try to be transparent and share what we're doing. So I think that's effective too. JRSS was an initial Army Air Force DISA initiative. And you know, we stood up the first JRSS at Joint Base San Antonio back in September. I think what's new now is the Navy and Marine Corps have joined the team. I just finished my last DCO Corps lead, Fort Huachuca, last week. Navy and Marine Corps are at the table, and we actually have a bottoms-up plan to finish the installation of JRSSs on all NIPRNet, all SIPRNet, all DOD. And so that we came up with a funding strategy. We're going to brief to the DOD CIO for approval, but it's got all DOD going behind JRSSs by end of fiscal year 16. And so I think we're at a good place. I think we're going to establish some initial capability where the whole department's behind it. This is like enterprise email. Having the whole Department of Defense behind a single security architecture that you're operating jointly by tier, echelon by tier, right, is huge. I mean, that's as big, if not bigger, than enterprise email. It's the next thing you want to do, have a single security architecture. I think we're at a very good place. I think we finally got agreement with everybody. It's the right thing to do. We've got an agreement on how to fund it and go forward. And setting the bar, saying by end of 16, we'll have everybody behind it or peered with it, and then build it from there, is a huge milestone. And I'm comfortable passing that off to Gary Wong and team.
It's interesting. You talk about the last meeting you just had and getting the Navy and Marine Corps on board. Because you had the example, San Antonio was the first JRSS that got launched, and maybe there was a second one that was right behind it. Having that example, enough for them to say, okay, not only is the Army and the Air Force serious about it, but it seems to have a positive impact? Or was there something else that got the whole Department of Defense on board?
Well, I think it's a gradual incremental thing. We're all doing the same thing. So nobody argued that doing a joint security architecture was bad. It's just that we were doing it by MILDEP. So there was a Navy Marine Corps architecture, an Air Force architecture, an Army architecture. I think what everybody finally realized, particularly with the budget constraints, is that it is more effective to have a single one DOD, and it is more secure, and it is cheaper. And I think that realization finally came there. And you know what? The nice thing about the job being the WCOG6 is I kind of had the role of a quarterback to bring the joint team together bottoms up. That approach has really worked in JRSS. The Navy's been participating in the dialogues for about three quarterlies, but this one I think got over the hump, and I think everybody's now agreed we're in the game and playing it. And so I was pleased that we brought in Air Force about a year ago into the partnership. What I'm very pleased about now is we brought Navy in before I left, and it really is a joint Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, just a partnership now.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk maybe some other priorities and some other things you've been working on. My guest today, former Deputy CIO G6 of the Army, Mike Krieger.
Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3 on Wednesdays, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community. Plus daily DoD updates, mornings and afternoons at 37 past the hour. DoD Wednesday on 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Jason Miller, your host. My guest today is Mike Krieger, the former Deputy CIO G6 of the Army. Mike, before break, we talked a lot about enterprise email, the JRSS initiatives. What other technology that's happening now in the Army or DoD-wide that the Army is maybe looking into or using that you think is also going to have a big impact in the next, you know, 3, 5, 7 years?
Yes, so I think there's three things. Mobility's already hit us, and mobility is just going to be more and more. So people are really have the ability now to operate from anywhere, and users are going to continue to want to exploit that. The second thing that's already here is cloud computing and analytics. That's going to continue to grow. But I think the thing that's going to tie it together and make it real is unified communications. General Farrell and Gary Wong are going to have to kind of finish this one, so I left without finishing it. But, you know, we've been partnering with DISA and the Air Force and Doug Wilson's team really close. I still expect there'll be an RFP for unified communications, and by that I mean presence and awareness, chat, voice, video, desktop sharing. I think it'll happen in 15. I think you'll see delivery 16, no later than 17. But when that happens, that's dramatic change. So now with my iPad away from work, I have a soft telephone or soft video. When I show up to work, I think that replaces my telephone. You put it in a fake telephone, and now that becomes the telephone in the airplane mode, and you have two apps. You see your phone. So what you see, ISDN video is going away, going to be replaced by UCIP video. DCO goes away, replaced by UC. And you've got additional capabilities you don't have now. So if you take that 4.3 million user gal for email, and that's now your gal for UC, you really have the ability to reach out to somebody in chat and say, hey, you got a minute to talk, and then you can talk with them, you can do a video with them. I just think you can share your desktop with them. I think that's huge. What I see in the next 24 months is as you deliver UC as a service from a commercial cloud or from a DISA cloud, I think we'll give industry the opportunity to decide what makes sense and how to compete for it. I think you see the ability of the business of the Army to change the way it does business and be more effective and drive costs down. And so I really think the next 3 years for the Army, and I think DoD and the federal government, is going to be UC.
When you talk about UC and you talk about enterprise email, a lot of times when you talk to the vendor community, one of the things they'll tell you is email is the step in the door, and then there's all this other communication, the collaboration, the chat, the video. That's what email opens the door for you. Is there a reason that you can talk to why not just follow in with DISA and go out to the community? Because I'm sure that the vendors are happy with the RFP, but at the same time, you've already shown success with DISA and email.
But I think you can accelerate it. So what UC did for the Army is it removed all the exchange servers and we cleaned up the network so we could now consume services from the cloud. Okay, that was huge for both the Army and for DISA. Now that we can consume services from the cloud, and we got a clean network, we're adding capacity, we're adding joint regional security stacks, I absolutely believe industry can probably respond faster and go quicker. And so we want to make sure in the RFP we give them the opportunity to compete from government clouds, at least in CONUS, in addition to maybe partnering with DISA and using government data facilities. Now that you've got the Army network ready, and you've got the right security with JRSSs, and you've got the right capacity, what you really want is speed. And so I think it's still a partnership with DISA, but I think there's absolutely a potential bigger role from industry to provide the speed that you want to roll this out.
When you look forward, you talked about mobility, you talked about unified communications, and you talked about cloud as it relates to big data. What's next?
I think what you're going to see is mobility really becomes the end state. I think we're going to get devices that I don't want to say smaller. I actually think mini pads about what you're going to do to function on, but I think you're going to see guys that no longer have desktop computers and that with some fairly reasonably sized tablets can do all the work they can do today. And I expect it'll go to classified. And once you get that, then that means I should be able to roll into a talk and that there's a cloud in the talk that's wireless, and then I just go to work. And I really think what we're going to see is this migration of I don't need something that's very big anymore, and whether it's classified or unclassified, I can get all my work done. I think it's going to be a lot talking to it. I mean, you're going to be able to do verbal commands, not going to have to type as much, but it's all going to be in a tablet.
I'm glad you brought up the classified side, because one of the things that I think the Army and the DoD has always been ahead of the rest of the government is around identity management, access control, specifically the CAT card, but now it's getting broader. What's the status of that initiative, broadly speaking, and how does it relate back to what you're talking about with the tablets and the mobility and the cloud, et cetera?
The best thing that's happened is NIST put out the new standard for derived credentials. And I think now that you've got a standard for derived credentials where you can associate your CAC cert essentially with a chip on the mobile device, I do think that's an accelerator of the next 12 to 18 months. What you can see is you won't have to have your CAT card physically on you or your wireless sled, and you'll have your derived credentials in the device. Then as long as you have the device, it'll still be two-factor authentication, but it's with you now. That's huge in keeping your strong identity, but having it mobile.
And it's also the back-end side where when you're applying data tags and standards, so that's access control piece, not just access to the network, but does Mike Krieger have access to this data? Does he have access to this system? That's another piece that's happening that's maybe attached to or related to this idea of derived credentials. Is that starting to also to take hold in the Army as you guys set up these unified communications and enterprise email, et cetera?
I think the most success we see in the Army now is really with DCGS Army. They've got a nice job of attribute-based access control. Now, they have to because, you know, they're a program that operates on the SIPRNet and on JWIX too. So they've done a really nice job. We're looking at the model that they've used to do it to extend Broad Army. What we've done with Enterprise Email by using the DMDC MIL Connect as the GAL source for the Army, you've got everybody that's putting their metadata in the same place. What that does, the metadata about what my job is and where I work and what my roles are, the further we get that and keep that current, then you can really start leveraging that now enterprise data sourced for rules to grant access. That's clearly the future. We've got a lot of work to do, but everything we're doing is going to enable that as we move forward.
Mike, we're almost out of time, but before I let you go, just want to hit upon two last things. The first thing is the role of the deputy CIO, the role of the CIO has changed incredibly over the last decade or so. Talk a little bit about the change you've seen and where is the CIO going forward? I mean, is it going to be that information officer that has that title, or is it going to be that strategic person that we always talk about, the seat at the table, or where?
The key now is the CIO's role shifted to enable the Army functionals, the Army users, do their job better. Because everybody depends on IT now. And so it's our job to get ahead of customer demand and make sure we're putting capabilities in the network, security in the network, capacity in the network, so as our users leverage IT to do their job, the network's ubiquitous. I don't think that's going to change. I think that's now the CIO's role, and it really is seat at the table, but get ahead of your customers, the network's ubiquitous and always there and provisioned correctly. I think the challenge for CIOs is the pace of change is going to be to aggressively keep making the argument that I've got to add this capacity, this security to the network to stay ahead of you. We've successfully made that argument in the Army the last 3 or 4 years. I think the challenge for the CIO is to stay at the table, keep making that argument, keep building out ahead of customer demand.
And I think there's been this rise of the chief data officer, and I think the CDO, if you want to call him that, and then you add to that the chief risk officer, that all this is going to fall under the CIO's role, so it gives them even push them a little higher up because now they aren't worried about the data tagging. Now they're worried about the enterprise security risk. Is that just part of that evolution?
I think it is. But in DoD, we got to work on the partnership between the CIO and the cyber community. So that partnership's going to mature because a lot of the data tagging and security is going to be a partnership between the CIO and the cyber.
And finally, you have you already know who your replacement is, Gary Wong. He is the new deputy CIO G6. What kind of advice did you give to him when you sat down and had lunch or coffee with him? What'd you tell him? Because walk into this role after serving here for the last 5-6 years, it's hard to fill someone's shoes like that. I'm sure that he's got to get a lay of the land a little bit as well.
So, you know, I spent a week with him. He actually joined me for last quarterly at Fort Huachuca a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, the advice I gave him, number one, have fun. So I'm very passionate about this job. I had a lot of fun. So it's a lot more enjoyable if you go into it thinking you're going to have fun doing it. Second thing is, IT is a team sport. So I told him he's going to have to partner within the Army. He's got teammates across the Army he's got to collaborate and partner with. And then he's got partners exterior. And, you know, this job, the last 3 or 4 years, has been the quarterback of the joint team. And I told him, I think you need to sustain that role. You need to reach out to our distant mission partners, to our Air Force, Navy, Marine Corps, OSD, and joint staff, and keep that up. That partnership is really starting to pay off. And I think the return on that is huge. And so, you know, my recommendation to him is, you know, get to know everybody internally in the Army. The deputies network is huge, a great partnership across the Army. And keep up the mission partner network that we've established and sustain it and grow it. At the end of the day, IT is a team sport. The bigger team you got, the more momentum you can keep.
And of course, you can keep your number on speed dial. My guest today was Mike Krieger, the former Deputy CIO G6 of the Army. The retired one, I guess, is the better way to say it. Mike, thanks so much for all your time over the years and for your service to the country.
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity to share today, Jason.
When we come back, we're going to shift to the Marine Corps. We'll hear from their CIO, General Kevin Nally, about his take on the Joint Regional Security Stacks, or JRSS. I'm Jason Miller. You're listening to Ask the CIO on FederalNewsRadio.com.